Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because... I got the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink?
This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' cold K-Cup pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Hey everybody, welcome to the In and After Show. I'm back. I went to New York and I came back from New York all in one piece, a little bit jet lagged.
How tired are your arms, Lindsay? Hey.
How are you like whipping out those jokes when you don't even have kids yet? That's like not legal. They give you a license for that? For those dad jokes?
No, I'm 100% an unlicensed dad joker. The dad joke police will come for me. It's only a matter of time.
Yeah. Well, for those who didn't know, I was in New York for Anime NYC, which is one of the last really big con of the year. Anime Frontier is going to be in Texas, which is kind of run by the same folks. But that's a new one, and it'll be exciting to kind of see how that turns out. But yeah, it was at the Javits, huge turnout, still a comfortable size con. I think if you want like kind of the bigger con experience without the sardines in a can feeling, so it's still like comfortable getting around, although they do have plans to expand. They want to move in further into the Javits and you know, just expand the programming, I think. So we'll have to see how that turns out. But the big thing at Anime NYC, the inescapably biggest part of it was definitely Hajime Isayama was there, the creator of Attack on Titan.
I was going to say, you might even call it a Titanic event. It's okay. It's fine. There'll be more opportunities in the future.
I'll pause next time to give you a still work that in there. Yeah. He has never been to the United States before. Like, this was his first convention stateside. I assume he got the opportunity because Attack on Titan, the manga has wrapped up, so he's not currently writing it anymore. I got to interview him, and I didn't absolutely lose my shit, which is, you know, important when you get... I've only had a couple opportunities to, like, do the household name interviews. The other one was, you know, Sadamoto, the Evangelion manga creator. Slash a whole bunch of other things in 2013. Him and I've gotten to interview Geno Urobuchi a few times, but this was definitely up there on my big name list. Also, if you hear a cat, that's Isidore, and she's really mad I'm not letting her into the office right now while I record. But she's obnoxious and she'd be up on screen and like headbutting the microphone, so she can't come in right now.
How dare you not let her into her office? This is so,
yeah,
this is so disrespectful to her territory. You
know? But so I got to interview him and go to his panel, and so I'll be talking about that a little bit, as well as some of the other cool stuff going on at Anime NYC. We're gonna talk about the latest episode of Attack on Titan, which was disgusting.
You mean Chainsaw Man?
Yeah, did I say Attack on Titan?
Yeah.
Attack on Titan is always disgusting. Yeah,
Chainsaw I was going to say, the latest episode of Attack on Titan, whenever it comes out, will be disgusting.
It will be, yeah. No, Chainsaw Man was super gross. You and I knew this was coming. Didn't stop it from being super gross. So we'll be talking about that. Akiba Maid War, you know, just is continuing to hit it out of the park every single week.
Going places.
It's going places. A couple days. Yeah, the next episode is going to be out in a couple days, and I heard it's about baseball. So good. I'm excited to see Maids play baseball.
Good.
And I also want to talk about Gundam since it's back this week. It took a 1 week off. So, you know, we got to check in with those disaster space children and see how they're doing. But, so before we get to all that, remind you to please subscribe to this channel on YouTube. We're here every Tuesday, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Or you can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Music, or wherever you listen to your podcasts the following day. It's usually up by noon. I do my best. You can also, this is also streaming on Facebook and Twitter. So if you follow our Twitter account, which is @anime, this is live there right now.
Assuming Twitter is still functional by the time.
Yes. Well, right now, as of this recording, it still exists. But, you know, that could change at any time, right? Mm-hmm. And we're over on Facebook, too, if, you know, if you still use that. I've heard that there are people here that do still use that. So
there we go. Hi, Facebook.
Hi, Facebook. Hey, thanks for tuning in.
How's the meta?
How's the meta?
If anyone's watching this in the meta, I would be. Yeah. That'd be cool.
You know, I've seen some screenshots of businesses in the metaverse, and I just want to say, looks like shit in there, guys. Go play an MMO, please, and build your businesses and towns there. You know, buy a house in Final Fantasy.
There's a free 30-day subscription for Final Fantasy 14. It comes with access to Heavensward, and I can't remember the whole meme. But point being, Final Fantasy 14, if you built your business in Eorzea, you'd make money. So
There you go. All right, so I'm gonna dive right into the Hajime Isayama at Anime NYC talk here. He had a panel that was in the special events room, which was the biggest space at Anime NYC. It was totally full from what I could see. You had to put your name in a lottery to get a seat, you know, unless you were or press or something. You know, it's one of our few perks. And I had a tweet thread about, you know, what he was talking about. I wasn't live tweeting it, actually. I brought my husband with me to a con for the first time in forever, and I had him live tweet it as me while I took notes. He was a very good PA. He introduced himself as my PA to people several times. So anyway, if you didn't see that thread, that's final. But the panel itself was really interesting. They talked about a lot of things I didn't already know, like the specific piece of artwork called Kaiju that inspired Isayama at a very young age with the concept of Attack on Titan, that he first floated it as like a pilot chapter when he was 19, got rejected by a whole bunch of publishers before he met his editor at Kodansha.
I bet they all feel really stupid right now.
Probably. Admittedly, and Isayama will tell you this, he really didn't think his art was good enough, and quite a few of the editors told him they liked the concept, but that his art just wasn't up to par. And, you know, if you read the manga, like, he got better with time, and I don't think he should be too hard on himself. If you ever read early chapters of Oh My Goddess, it don't look anything like later chapters of Oh My Goddess. Like, it's a little funky looking there in the beginning and definitely improved with time. So it's not like that's it.
One of my favorite, like, 2000s era, like, cultural touchstone is all of the four panel gamer comics, and just watching the art on, like, you know, page one.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it worse than MS Paint. I mean, MS Paint was like a parody of that. And then after like 10 years, it would look, you know, and sometimes it would look like fairly pretty good.
And I mean, to be honest, that's how real art works. All art, like, I think there's this misconception that some people are just like, they like wake up from birth with like a pencil in their hand and then can just like draw amazing things. And the reality of it is it's just from drawing constantly for a long period of time. It's a commitment, and it's not just, you know, oh, I have this natural talents and that's why I can do the art and you cannot do the art. But Isayama struck me as a particularly humble guy and someone who seems at least to some degree, still very shooken up about ending his manga and the reception the ending of his manga had. This became kind of apparent throughout, before the con even started. Kodansha put a statement from him on their Instagram where he basically acknowledged that the ending was controversial, but he asked people to please be nice to him, showing that he kind of maybe had some anxiety for appearing at this huge event with a bunch of people who had read his stories and thinking that, you know, maybe people were going to confront him and be like mean, you know, like maybe he was worried about that. And so when we went to the panel, it was asked to him, did you know how the story was going to end, you know, when you started it? And even asking him about that at the panel, the audience, just all this like kind of ominous murmuring started, like, oh shit. Like, did they just ask him about the ending? Are we going to actually talk about the ending? I mean, I don't think we should ask him about the ending. Cause like, And this was kind of the biggest moment at the panel itself, is that he said that he had a general idea of how he wanted it to end, and it was still based on that piece of artwork. Let me pull up the artwork really quick. Because it was it was by a famous artist. He's very well he was very well regarded in his time. If I can remember, give me just a sec, James. Kill time. I've got to look something up.
Well, while we're killing time, I'm also curious to know at the panel, was there any, because I know we got the first key art for the new, the final season. Was there any like kind of cross promotional stuff going on? Were they trying to like kind of,
they really didn't discuss the anime like at all, which is pretty interesting. Cause I think because it was Kodansha, even though Wit Studio was also there and they did the early seasons, but there was really no cross discussion about the anime itself. It was all focused on the manga. Okay, I found it. So let me just,
I guess it could be they're waiting until it's closer to whatever the release date's going to be to start hyping it up, but
yeah. And I mean, that would kind of be on MAPPA's end when that happens. Okay, so this is the painting that and it was shown during the panel. And it's called Kaiju, and this came out probably in like the 1950s or 60s. What's interesting about it is that the artist himself was popular for basically taking small torn pieces of paper and putting them, using those to create
like a collage.
A collage, yeah. Okay. And the artist of that, let me just pull that up because the artist it's based on is, he's a pretty interesting dude. He his name is Kiyoshi Yamashita, and he was kind of known as the Japanese Van Gogh at the time. And the form of artwork I was talking about is called a Chigiri-e.
Okay.
So that's how he made it, and his life was just really interesting. He was very likely autistic and initially was put in was bullied very heavily in school and reacted violently once. And so then he was put into a care facility for the mentally handicapped and started doing art there and did it very well. But this was also World War II was coming up, and he didn't want to do the testing to go into the Imperial Japanese Army. So he fled. He just like packed up a backpack and then started traveling around everywhere making art, but not really staying in one place very long, so they couldn't find him. They did eventually find him, and he was, you know, not made to go into the army at the time and continued on. He didn't live very long. I think he died of, it was in his late 40s due to a heart condition. So, but yeah, but that kaiju artwork, Isayama saw it at a very young age, and it stuck with him to the point where by the time he was 19, that's when he submitted his pilot manga chapter. So anyway, it was asked at the con, did you always know how your story was going to end? And I'm not going to tell you the ending. We're not going to spoil the ending here. But like I said, it's controversial. There was backlash involved. And Isayama even said at the time, I knew where the series would land, but details like how the main character would get there weren't determined. And he said, I still have my doubts within myself if I did it right. I still struggle with this point, and I'm really sorry about it. So he basically apologized to this huge room of people for the ending. And so everyone immediately, started, someone yelled out like, we love you. And, and the applause came and people stood up and they cheered. And his immediate reaction was to kind of like put a hand to his heart. Like, he was struck by the outpouring and then kind of like do a slight dab. And then he said, I'm trying not to cry. And I was like, am I going to watch this man cry on stage? And I feel like I also knew, but didn't, that he's only 36 years old. Like,
that's wild.
Yeah. He's only like a year older than I am. And he started the manga, in his early 20s. Because again, the pilot was when he was 19. And then he said, he spent about 6 more months after that working on it. And
I for one cannot believe that. I'm trying to think of the stuff that I made when I was 19, and it was all pretty terrible. So pretty much everything I ever worked on as a teenager was bad. So the fact that he came up with something that was even like 20% as good as what the final product of Attack on Titan would someday be,
yeah,
pretty incredible.
Yeah, I tried to make a manga with a friend when I was like in 7th grade or something. It was some Sailor Moon sort of knockoff, and we made like 2 issues of it or something and showed it to our classmates, but that was kind of the extent of it. It was really kind of heart-wrenching, and you can tell that I don't know if he'll make another manga, to be absolutely honest. I mean, Attack on Titan has made him a lot of money. I mean, he said that he was really broke when he started making it. He said that none of his family or friends believed that he would succeed either, which is just sort of hard to hear. Like, he didn't have.
And now I bet they're all feeling like idiots too, because that man never has to work another day in his life.
Yeah, he didn't have anyone in his corner at the time, and then there was the backlash over the ending and him apologizing for the ending. And they asked him at the panel if he'll make another manga, and I don't know if this was the question being translated directly or not, but he actually responded with, "No, sorry." And that was just sort of it. Like, and he's said in past like television programs in Japan that maybe there's something else he wants to make, but he's not sure if he'll do it. So it just seems like this is just me reading into it. Cannot confirm, I don't know what's in his heart, but I don't know. It kind of seemed a little bit like he was traumatized by the whole thing. He only slept like 2 to 3 hours during the final weeks of making it. He wasn't sleeping at all. He was just really worried about living up to fans' expectations for how to end the manga. And that sounds like horrible. I don't know if I'd want to make art again.
No kidding. Yeah. And I mean, especially just with the way that manga like that is published, and the work schedule that you have to stick to. Mm-hmm. It's not good for your health, unless you're in a position like Tatsuki Fujimoto. He was able to take a significant amount of time off of Chainsaw Man to pursue other projects and presumably rest,
hopefully,
and maybe get a little bit of like headway done, so he didn't have to work the obscene hours that even the mangaka with assistants, it's an insane amount of work to take on, with the expectations the way that they are. So I for one applaud the man. If he never works another day in his life, he's earned it.
Or if he finally gets to open that onsen that he wants. He loves onsens. He referred to them as a legal drug. So
sure.
If he wants to go retire at 36 with his wife and work an onsen or something, sure, do it. So, I just hope that, he finds some kind of peace with what he made and how it turned out, regardless of whether everyone was happy with it or not. You can't make everybody happy. And that's probably definitely harder when your audience is as broad as it is. So even if it's a small percentage of people that aren't happy, if it's a small percentage of a really big number, that's still a lot of people yelling at you.
Yes.
So
Well, it's good to know that now that the issue has been fully resolved, the ending of Attack on Titan will never generate controversy ever again, I'm sure.
When's the next season come out, James?
Sometime in like January is my guess. Why?
Yeah.
The completely uncontroversial, you know,
yeah,
100% beloved finale of Attack on Titan that everyone is going to adore.
Other things out of Anime NYC that I wanted to talk about, I mean, other than the Hajime Isayama being a big one, they premiered the first episode of Trigun Stampede. Now, I wasn't at that, but Ruben Baron, a freelancer for us, was. Their response to it was that it was good. Still excited to see what Studio Orange does with that. There were a ton of manga licenses we were going to go through, but Yen Press licensed like 24 books of either light novels, manga, sketchbooks, art books, something for everybody, really. And the other big one, I guess, is if you've heard of this show called Oshi no Ko, that manga, you can read it on Manga Plus, I think is what it is. And it's written by Aka Akasaka, who is the creator of Kaguya-sama, with art by Mengo Yokoyari, who is the artist behind Scum's Wish. And I didn't know this, but apparently it takes place within the universe of Kaguya-sama.
Okay.
I don't know how, but they coincide in the same universe. And I think it has a reincarnation angle and involves idols, but there's like a big twist. I don't know what the twist is because I haven't read it yet, but it's getting it.
I want to read this right now. This sounds amazing.
Yeah. And it's getting an anime adaptation, and High Dive is going to screen it. And I guess the reason, or stream it. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because that just seems like a big get for me. I know I said that when they got Urusei Yatsura, but I'm just pleased to see that they are continuing to expand their catalog and get some really enticing shows on there, like Akiba Maid War.
Absolutely.
Which we'll be talking about here in a bit.
Oh,
but
yeah,
if I read the description, again, this doesn't really tell you what the twist is. So I feel like you should still maybe read the first volume and see how you feel about it. But Goro is a doctor who coincidentally handles the childbirth of his favorite idol, Ai Hoshino, who took a hiatus from the entertainment industry to give birth to her twin babies. However, just before Ai gives birth, Goro dies from an accident, but is reborn as one of her children, Aquamarine Hoshino, with his memories fully intact.
Okay.
So that's it.
So
I guess that means magical reincarnation exists in the Kaguya-sama universe then?
Wait, So is he one of the twins, or is he a different child that comes later?
I assume he's one of the twins.
Okay.
Just because the death coincides very closely to the birth of the twins, so it would seem like that information would only be relevant if he's reborn as one of the twins.
But what happened to that baby's soul, Lindsay? What happened?
Listen, I don't know how souls work in this universe, okay? Presumably, maybe you don't get assigned a soul until after you're born?
Until like five minutes after birth? Or however? Okay. Wait, okay. I thought that he helped give birth to the twins.
No, he died before he could deliver them.
Okay. I thought he gave birth to them and then immediately after died and then just like popped into one of the twins' bodies.
And kicked the residing soul.
Yeah, and I was like, what the heck? That poor baby. Like, he had a whole thing going.
And then it just got hijacked. No, yeah. Yeah, just before I gives birth, he dies.
Okay. So, all right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm down. I will definitely check it out.
Yeah. Yeah. I've favorited it with the meaning to go back to it, but still have it. Same with the Hell's Paradise, which the trailer for that isn't new, but Crunchyroll confirmed that they're going to stream that at Anime NYC. And I'm still like pumped for that one because it's just.
And that one's done, right? That manga's finished.
Always coming out with the questions, reminding me things I should have known before I started talking. Hell's Paradise manga.
I just remember us talking a while ago about one of the big new shonen anime that was coming out, and that there was one of them where
it ended last year.
Okay.
And it's 13 volumes.
Okay, that's
yes.
The one I was thinking of. Where
yeah,
we know it has an ending.
Yes.
So that's good. It's not going to just like go off on its own.
Yeah.
Which can also be fine, but you know.
Yeah. So that's kind of it. There weren't any new anime really announced, I think, that we didn't already know about. Just like Crunchyroll's got a lot of it. They premiered the first episode for some of their January slate. And of those, the freelancer that I sent there again, Ruben Baron, said that Tomo-chan is a Girl is the one that probably looks the best out of that bunch, which is a rom-com about, you know, this very tomboyish girl, and her best friend is a guy who's apparently kind of a playboy and really dense, and she confesses to him, and he doesn't even kind of realize that she's confessed, because he looks at her like one of the guys kind of deal. And
kind of a Nozaki-kun situation.
Yeah, there's, you know, shenanigans and whatnot. So
okay.
It might be one to keep your eye on for January. Yeah. So let's get right into Chainsaw Man, aka the barf episode.
Getting puked in the mouth.
Oh my god. So this is once again another example of an episode where I remembered the overall plot from the manga, but not like the nitty-gritty details, like all of the here, let's use this one. Yeah. The nitty-gritty details. So I didn't really like I knew that they were gonna fight the Eternity Devil, and I knew they were gonna make it out, but I didn't and I knew that, you know, Denji was gonna get barfed, his first kiss was gonna be full of barf.
You don't forget a barf kiss.
Oh god. It's really disgusting. But I didn't remember that, say, he fights the Eternity Devil for 3 days straight while everyone's starving.
And he's just drinking all that nasty blood.
Just drinking all that nasty blood. And that, yeah, that whole sequence was a lot. Like,
is this in the dinner time episode?
Don't watch this during dinner. I thought this use of flashback about Aki and Himeno and her past partners was good. I always just love, like, whenever this guy shows up because he's sexy.
Yes.
In like a, you know, gross uncle kind of way. I don't know. It's the voice actor. It's 100% the voice actor. He's also got one of those scars on his face that, like, tells you a story without having to see it. You know, at some point, something sharp got stuck in his mouth and, like, cut him open like a fish, and then he had to get stitched back up. Don't know how it happened, but
it turns out he was actually just a really enthusiastic Joker cosplayer back in the day. Back in the day, yeah. We're talking Tim Burton Batman, given this time period.
So
Jack Nicholson and said, I have to be that guy. Or maybe he's an Ichi the Killer fanboy. I think
I think maybe that would make a little, well, I'm not sure. That might have came out in the early aughts.
He actually kind of looks like Ichi, to be honest.
He does a little bit.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's an intentional reference.
It could be, because, yeah, did Ichi the Killer have that dye job where it was like a sun-in sort of blonde and then just like shaved on the sides?
I want to say he at least had the blonde on top.
Yeah.
It's been a while, but
I'm sure Fujimoto has seen Ichi the Killer, now that I think about it. Because, like, isn't in the final reveal he's wearing some weird, like, latex knife getup?
I think so.
It's been a long time since I've watched
it. I watched that movie in middle school. So.
Yeah, you and I had the same, like, non-involved parents when it came to our entertainment. Because it seems like we both watched movies we really shouldn't have watched, starting at like 14 years old or something like this. Ichi the Killer around that age, Requiem for a Dream around that age, Fight Club.
The minute I could get DVDs from the library without having to check them out at the Blockbuster, that was the end of it. That's right.
Yeah.
Because they did not care.
I had friends who had older siblings, and so they would just take them out of their room. And then
My dad made like a kind of a feeble effort to pretend that he cared. Like, he would put like the parental control password on like TVMA TV shows. Okay. But then when I would tell him like, oh yeah, like I watched like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre or whatever, he'd be like, oh, how'd you like it? Like, he didn't, I honestly don't know why he tried.
If you cared enough to hack the password, then there's no stopping you. So what'd you think of the movie? But someone, Quantify, in the comments said Perpetual Motion. That was actually, do we have a screenshot of that? Because that was actually one of my favorite things.
I got a lot of screenshots for this one. I tried to get something that could potentially be
Eureka, dude. Yeah, I'm a fucking perpetual motion machine. Thanks to yeah, that was a good line. That
although, no, and this could just be a translation thing. Like maybe mm-hmm. it's a different term he's using. Yeah. But given that Denji is not even literate enough to read a dinner menu at a restaurant,
it's true.
Does it? And not that I care.
Okay.
Does it make sense that he knows what a perpetual motion machine is?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. I'll just agree that that's an inconsistency with, yeah, because later we see that he can't read kanji. And
I mean, ding, the anime's ruined. It's over. It's 2 stars out of 5.
Here, let's just make up a theory that when he's in chainsaw mode, somehow he retains the intelligence of the devil that has possessed him and is thus smarter.
And that devil has like a high school education.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, when he meets Pochita, Pochita's like in a wounded state. And we get a sense also from the Eternity Devil here, who is familiar with Chainsaw, the Chainsaw Devil. He says that he's much weaker than he used to be.
Chainsaw Devil's got a rep.
So yeah. Imply that Chainsaw Devil's got a rep. And that rep used to be that he was way scarier than he is even now. So maybe Pochita, you know, as a devil, wasn't always just a tiny little cute doggy, you know.
All right, just, undoing. Anime's good again. Thank you.
Anime's good again. All right, yeah. We fixed it. How did you interpret this? Okay, so, like, even I was, like, watching him, like, tear the fuck up out of this Eternity Devil. She's having these flashbacks about how, like, the best devil hunters are crazy. You know, if you've got your head on straight, you're dead. You need someone who's nuts enough that the devils can't predict what's going to happen and also are basically too crazy to be scared of the devils, so the devils can't feed off of them to get power. And Kimono thinks about all this, and then she kind of enters what looks like a somewhat ecstatic state while watching him.
I mean, we're probably going to have to talk about how much this adult woman is thirsting after the 16-ish-year-old boy. But, you know, whatever. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, we know that when Aki joined up with her, he was also younger. I don't know if Aki's supposed to be the same age as Denji, or maybe like 18 or 19, like a couple years older sort of thing.
We were talking then last week, someone in the chat mentioned that he has to be at least, he's old enough to drink, right? So he's at least 20.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. He's old enough to drink. So he's probably.
Buy cigarettes, so.
Yeah. Okay, good point. Yeah. So, I mean, he wasn't when they first met, but at least now he's probably at least 20 and Denji's 16. Yeah. This was a weird point for me in the manga, too. Not this particular scene where she's looking at him, but just this particular develop with Himeno. I mean, she's always kind of flirty, right? Like, you know, she presents the kiss motivation for him to begin with. There's also the fact that she seemed, at least when they finally get to the bar, like she seemed surprised to find out he was 16. And because she turns around, she's like, "You didn't drink anything, did you?" And he's like, "It's just tea. It's just iced tea." So I think she thought he was at least 20.
Or 18 or whatever. Like,
or whatever. I mean, yeah, you got to be 20 to order at a bar, but maybe you would turn away, not really like call someone out if they were 18 instead. I don't know.
I guess it's important to note that Denji does say that he thinks he's 16.
That's also true, because
he doesn't actually know. So.
Yeah, boys never had a calendar. You know, probably lost track of day, week, or year at some point whenever because his dad died when he was pretty young. And so he's just kind of been, and he's never been to school. Or at least hasn't in a very long time.
Boy was eating bread out of the trash for a day.
Yeah, was eating bread out of the trash. I don't know how Aki got healed. I mean, they take him to the hospital, but he supposedly had an open wound for like 3 days while Denji was fighting.
I don't know, maybe the fox devil can heal you once you.
But he didn't have any access to the fox devil inside the hotel because they were trapped in.
Once he's out of the hotel.
Oh, sure.
Maybe that helped her. I don't know.
So when Denji finally finds the Eternity Devil's heart, and you've got a screenshot up here of its googly eyes saying, "Please kill me," all that reminds me of is the like ostrich abomination from South Park. Because my husband and I still have this ongoing thing as a joke where we'll do the voice and say, "Please kill me," Because that's what happens in the episode where it's please, like,
it's not like it's happened in a lot of South Park episodes. I don't recall the ostrich, but I'm sure they
was an ostrich human hybrid, and I really don't want to get into the details of how it existed, but
that's probably better that we
I think it was the PETA episode, if that kind of puts things into perspective.
Oh, you know what? That's kind of that's ringing some bells.
Yeah. It's scarring. This picture's a mood.
It is. It is. We've all been there, you know. We've all spent 3 days starving to death in a pocket dimension while your coworkers try to murder you and or drink toilet water and you know. I do think I really do think it's funny. One of my favorite I love how I really have to I cannot emphasize enough how funny Chainsaw Man is. Like just and not just like funny because it's so absurd, but like just the levels of humor. It has like the super absurd jokes, it has the really subtle jokes, and just the line where Human is like, yeah, Kobeni and Arai both feel really bad about trying to kill Denji, so they're kind of thinking of quitting. It's like, yeah, I mean, I probably would too.
Yeah,
if I was them, I'd be like, oh, I don't know if I can go back to the office today. I definitely threatened my coworker with murder
several times. And shanked the wrong one with a kitchen knife, you know. I'm feeling good. Like, it just took a huge shit. This exact line, I'm pretty sure, is in the manga. It's hashtag relatable, but still not something I think most people would say out loud, which is why this show works.
I mean, I feel like outside of skipping the, what was it, the Muscle Devil?
Mm-hmm.
Outside of skipping that early fight in episode 2, I want to say I don't think the manga has really cut anything outside of maybe like a line here or there. Or like a shot here or there, but it's been like remarkably just kind of on point with everything that has been in the manga so far, at least to my memory. I haven't gone back and checked the manga to like compare and contrast at all, but I feel like it's been doing a pretty good job with keeping everything, even the things that people thought they wouldn't keep. Like Denji getting puked all over in the mouth and then swallowing it like a little, like a weird little creature.
Oh God. So yeah, I mean, Himeno promised Denji a kiss with tongue as a reward for getting them out of the hotel / killing the devil there. They all go out to eat. Makima's even invited. Himeno is drinking herself under the table because I think that girl's got unresolved trauma from all the deaths of her partners and whatnot, and anxiety about Aki dying, and
yeah, these are all deeply broken people.
Yes, yes, for sure. For sure. And there are a couple of people we haven't met before at the table. The three folks there at the end were not in the hotel with them, but are also, you know, part of the public sector that does this. Power's big move is just taking all the food for herself and refusing to share, like one of my cats whenever I open the wet cat food.
Yep. That's what you have to do. That's the only way to make sure that what's yours is yours.
Yeah, I mean, I too would just, you know, if I was a blood devil and I could hammer someone in with my own plasma, maybe I too would be like, I'm taking all the sashimi, bitch.
Well, I don't think I got a screenshot of it because the conversation was like too many individual lines of dialogue to make it worthwhile.
Yeah. But,
you really do have to commend Power for resisting her urge to just kill everyone there and take their shit.
Yeah.
Because she could do that.
She could.
Except, well, I guess, I mean, maybe a part of it, she knows that Denji would kill her. But,
yeah.
You know, like she, like, hey, you know, I've been introducing, my wife and I, we've been introducing a new cat into our home. And the food feuds are real.
Yeah.
And the fact that she's not even, like, stabbing anyone in the hand with a fork.
Yeah.
That's power progress right there.
That's true. She also didn't throw any food on the walls this time. Looking back at the fight we saw earlier, I'm a little curious why she never jumped in.
Denji had it.
It lit for 3 days.
Well, okay. I mean, but let's be real. That guy is a flailing mass of chainsaw limbs with virtually no self-control.
That's true. It was a small enclosed space.
Yeah, so. Like, I mean, I don't know what you could do other than just get sliced up.
Yeah.
So, and she was tired, you know.
And she was tired.
She was hungry. She also didn't eat for 3 days, so.
Yeah. Also, I know I ragged on Kobeni pretty hard last week. A lot of people did, and there was a lot of backlash to the backlash to Kobeni for all of us being so mean about her, you know, completely losing it during the entire situation. So I'm going to throw her a bone here and tell you that her outfit was cute in this episode. It was cute. She had a couple little cute lines about how alcohol is best when it's on someone else's tab. Also, even though her outfit was cute, it's a hand-me-down from her sister. And apparently she has 8 sisters, I think, if I caught that line. Sisters. If she has eight, there's that makes 10 of them all together, because it's the brother that's going to college.
Yep.
And then there's her, and then there's the 8 sisters. So that is 10 children. What is happening?
It also makes me think that there might be a little bit of, a gender disparity in that household. If they're saying that the brother's the only one that's good enough to go to school and the 8 women that are living there.
Yeah, I guess they didn't explicitly say none of the other sisters are going to college. It's just that the brother gets to go instead of Kobeni specifically. So, okay. I mean, there's some wiggle room there. But
it could be that the whole family also just thinks she sucks.
That's also possible. I mean, once you get past, let's say 5, and I feel like it's okay for me to say this because my mom comes from a family of 7. There are 7 of them, and her dad was a family of 13, okay? So, like, but it's unusual for the 90s, especially, for that many kids, and it's just like, is this like one of those full quiver situations? I mean, I know that's not really a religious thing in Japan specifically, but it's kind of weird. It's kind of weird. Maybe it was just one of those things where it's like her brother was born last, and they just like felt like they had to have a boy, and so they kept trying, and it took 10 tries. I don't know. That's a lot of kids. Also, power takes all the fried chicken too, which is the correct and appropriate response. Yeah. So, yeah, Denji can't read. Can someone please send this picture to Leah Michelle from Glee for me? I think she could relate specifically to this.
Anyone that's ever tried to learn Japanese can relate to this image. I'll tell you what, this is that moment gave me flashbacks to my high school, my college Japanese classes.
Yeah.
Everything was going great.
Yeah.
Right up until we started learning kanji. And then I was like, oh no.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no. Like I'm looking at this, I'm like, oh, okay. I'm good with the hiragana. I'm good with the katakana. Yeah. And then, but the kanji also is a handwritten menu. It's not like typed even. So, I mean,
I thought it was maybe just like a font, like a, you know, those fancy restaurants that like
oh, sure.
The menus look all.
You think like this rustic. Is like Japanese cursive, James?
Yeah. Oh no. I've seen Japanese cursive. It is genuinely illegible. So no, well, this is just, you know, stylish.
Well, what I can tell you is this is fried potatoes for 200 yen right here.
$2 for a plate of chips. That's 90s prices right there.
And this is, you know, the kisu tempura, which that's so good. And here's the karaage. So here's the fried chicken right here, the karaage.
But yeah, that kisu tempura is what gets this whole train rolling.
And Denji gets that's such a good face.
It is.
He's like, eh. I'm 16 if I remember right, and my hobbies are eating and sleeping.
The hobby of every teenager.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm kind of wondering, I just now noticed, and I'm curious if this is another situation like we had with the porno magazines earlier. There's a poster in the back of this picture.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
Introducing himself, or it's a beer poster for Lager Beer. And I would, dollars to donuts, bet you it's based on like a real poster from that, like real ad from time period. Hayak Captain is like I don't think he's called Aki that before, but it's amusing to me that they keep making up different little nicknames for him, like Hayak Captain. Obviously, I'm trying to get to the part where, yes, okay, so Makima does eventually show up. And it puts Denji in this really funny situation where he doesn't want Makima to see him kiss Himeno. And he still wants Himeno to kiss him. But, like, the guy's trying... What's funny to me is, like, he's trying to play both fields with these women a little bit.
Yes.
But neither of them are really, he thinks he's kind of being a player.
Yes.
But they're not actually into him.
No.
No.
No. No, it is, it, yeah, it is, the best part of this whole thing is that, literally no one cares except for Denji, who has made, you know, this is his entire identity, is the fact that he's going to get to make out with a hot woman at some point, presumably based on the work incentive promises he's been given.
I'm impressed with Makima's drinking abilities. They're like inhuman, basically.
I mean, I have met men and women.
Yeah.
Mostly women, actually. Most of like the real, real heavyweights I've met in my life have all been women.
Yeah.
I have seen that many empty beer mugs.
That is impressive to me as someone who is a lightweight.
Yeah.
It takes me exactly like 1.5 drinks, like cocktails. And it's like, all right, I got to stop or I'm going to have a headache and also get really, really annoying / you know, lose my sense of depth and balance.
I mean, I feel like in Japan, like especially in like the corporate world or whatever, you kind of have to build up some level of tolerance since like binge work drink sessions are a real thing there.
And Aki's probably been at it for a while. Or not Aki, sorry. Makima's probably been at it for a while, given her position too.
Well, especially, I mean, if you're trying to impress, you know, all of the people that are presumably expecting you to, you know, not be good at your job for whatever reason, then you probably are going to figure out some techniques. You know, maybe she did a little bit of pregame Gatorading to
get those electrolytes, man. You're going to need them.
Strategically ate so that her stomach isn't empty, but it has enough room to, you know, to contain all of that alcohol. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. She's probably got some techniques. So we saw in an earlier screenshot here that Himeno was passed the fuck out, but she doesn't stay passed the fuck out. And did you specifically not screenshot it, James?
Did I not? I totally thought I did.
Oh, there it is.
Yay! The money shot.
So it's censored for TV. It is not in the manga. So if you go to the manga, you can, you know, get all the chunky bits if for some reason you want that. But like,
I almost wonder like if vomit is censored.
This is grosser though. For some reason,
it looks
like
a turd for one thing. When
yeah,
it's censored like that. It looks like she's just mouth crapping into his mouth.
Yeah,
but or like coughing up a hairball.
Yeah.
But,
I
almost wonder if they censor vomit in anime so much because it's hard to animate.
Oh,
like, you know, fluid is, you know, notoriously not fun, especially if there's like chunks in it, my guess would be.
Yeah.
Plus I'm sure it's like it's basically like a bit at this point, you know?
Yeah.
Like how censored cursing is always funnier than just regular cursing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we know what they've been eating anyway. So like you look at the color on the screenshot and you're like, oh, it's the chicken.
It's chicken and beer, really.
So that's Denji's first kiss is vomit. And yeah, that I think that would be traumatizing.
That's not all though. That's not all, because she doesn't just vomit into his mouth. As Power notes, because Denji was a desperate little trash boy for most of his life and lived in absolute destitution, he has trained himself to never waste a single bite of food, including food that has already been partially digested by another human being.
So gross.
And so while child Denji can look upon those alley rats and laugh at their puke eating, unfortunately, there's only so much that he can do in the middle of the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like, I mean, this was sort of, this made the joke funnier because it was like this in a tragic sense, because you get this flashback. He's literally eating what looks like a hamburger that he found in the garbage and sharing it with Pochita, but they're judging the rats who are eating like puke off the ground. And now it's like, now who's the rat, Denji? It's you.
It's you.
And Arai rubs his back the whole time.
And so, you know, you've really hit a low when Arai is like comforting you
Yeah.
Like when Arai is not the most embarrassing person in the room, that's when you know things have gone really bad.
Yeah. So the episode ends with Himeno taking Denji back home with her. And everyone's just sort of like, where'd Denji go? Oh, Himeno, you shouldn't be letting Himeno take any. She's like the most drunk person in the room.
Yes.
Why is no one should let her be responsible for anything at this point? And again, this is something that like clicked in my brain from the manga that I'd completely forgotten about, her taking him home with her. And this episode also ends, I think, the same place that chapter breaks out, with her essentially propositioning him for sex. And it's pretty uncomfortable because she's drunk.
Very.
And older. Denji seems like he's got a hangover or something when he's laying there. He seems disoriented, which is confusing to me because he didn't.
Well, no, because I think she spits beer into his mouth.
That's true.
And so I think he's such a lightweight that like drinking her mouth beer gets him a little buzzed.
Yeah.
Which again, there's just so many layers.
It's like, why do you keep regurgitating things into people though? Like, this isn't vomit, but it's still like, here's the beer from my mouth. And I'm trying to figure out, like, is this hot kind of in like that completely trashy sort of way? Or is it just...
Look, I'm not going to pretend to be in any way interested in someone spitting beer into my mouth. That's for
sure.
But can I just say that the way this scene was animated and directed, the very intentional weighty movement, the POV shots, it was kind of hot. I mean,
I think it was definitely kind of hot. They were definitely going for sexy. Like, whether it worked for the individual viewer or not, you know, up to you. But that was definitely, I feel like, the intention with the POV shots. And yeah, like when she, because she climbs on top of him and straddles him. And like, there's definitely a sense of weight to like her legs going on either side of him and then drinking the beer and then leaning over and putting it in his mouth and all those other sorts of things where you're like, okay, yeah, I mean, I can see what they're doing here. It does still seem kind of like someone you might have hooked up with from a shady club on the wrong side of town and went home. And then you're like, what am I doing? Is this person maybe going to rob me afterwards? I don't, you know.
To be clear, this isn't a good situation.
No. And, you know,
ANN is not endorsing whatever this is.
Yeah, not. The comments made during the ANN after show are not to be, they're not the views or opinions of my employer. I've probably said this before. So even though James and I may have said this is quote unquote hot, you are not to replicate this at any point in time in real life.
No, consent. Consent in both age and sobriety is paramount here.
Yeah, because again, like, Himeno is confused about how he even got there, which kind of insinuates that maybe she was blackout drunk when she took him home. So she's like, hey, why are you here? Do you want to drink beer from my mouth? Do you want to have sex or something? And
I don't know if this is an intentional Evangelion riff.
Yeah.
Because this exact shot is in the end of Evangelion. And probably one of the films. But at the very least, you know, my synapses started firing. And I feel like in all seriousness, I'm sure Tatsuki Fujimoto thinks this is pretty hot on some level. But I think what's also happening is I kind of feel like what the show is doing is taking the Misato archetype, you know, the drunk disaster mom.
Yeah. But
it's like everything else in the show, it's basically... it's pushing it further and playing it out, I think, a little more realistically, where, you know, here's what would happen if an emotionally damaged and traumatized adult, but still, you know, inexperienced youthful woman was placed in some level of authority over a teenage boy. And then there was some kind of weird stuff going on between them.
Where, because
Evangelion plays with that, but... You know, Chancellor Rand is like, here's what it would actually be like. And it's kind of weird.
Yeah. I also want to add that, like, in the screenshot, she says, you know, I noticed your head over heels for Makima. And then she brings it up about Aki. And I also think that what's happening right now that she's probably not fully aware of is that this is also her acting out in retaliation about Makima / Aki.
Oh, yeah. She's totally,
Like, she does not like the attention. She's jealous of the attention that Aki gives Makima as far as, like, him being attracted to her instead of being attracted to Himeno. I'm going to assume also that Himeno and Makima are relatively close to the same age. They, you know, look to be about the same age group. And we kind of got a hint of this earlier because they talked about having the dinner party, and then it's Aki who brings up, well, we should do it at this time because he knows Makima's schedule, and he's like, she's going to be out of town and I want her to be able to come. And Aki doesn't say anything, but I think that bothered her at the time.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I think what is her line here? She's like, you could do so much better than that, bitch. Like, she does not like Makima.
Yeah, yeah. She calls her a bitch. And where we have not seen, like, any interactions between the two of them that suggest that, like, Makima's mean to her or, like, is rude to her at work or anything. It's just, it seems completely out of spite. She just doesn't like Aki's attraction to Makima. She wants her and Aki to, you know, she asks him to join the private sector with her, which is basically an equivalent of run away with me in a professional sense, kind of run away with me.
She's trying to,
I want you to stick around. I want you to smoke so that's something we can share together, you know, all these things. And
she's like, we could go on dates after work every day. Like, she's not being subtle, which is probably also what's really frustrating her, because Aki is so consumed with his need to fight
the gun devil. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, Denji, unfortunately, and I think you sometimes see this in situations that are predatory in a way. You have this older person who feels like they're not in control of some element of their life, or that they're not getting the recognition that they deserve. And they act out by taking that out onto a younger, inexperienced person that mm-hmm. they can manipulate and then feel in control of. And that's what she's doing. It's bad.
It's not good.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think honestly, thematically, I think it works really well, because like you said, it, you know, the whole kind of through line of this episode is that in order to do this job, you have to on some level not be well.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I think this, because, you know, I joked earlier about how the way it was animated and filmed was pretty hot, but the actual context of it is very obviously not good. And I think that, you know, I think the way that the episode ends, I think the show does a good job of making it clear that this is like not a great situation.
Yeah.
Even though we're in Denji's headspace.
Exactly. I was going to say, we're in Denji's headspace from his point of view. Yeah, she's a good looking woman, and oh my God, she's interested in me, and this is going to give me opportunities to like do things that I've thought of with a woman before. And it's completely like, you know, he's not thinking about power dynamics or anything between him and her. And that's not really supposed to be his responsibility, even at 16. He's not supposed to. It would be unusual for him to be experienced enough to be able to even acknowledge that that's happening. So that's why the responsibility is supposed to fall onto Himeno.
And that's assuming that
he was drunk and mad at her boyfriend, the guy she wishes was her boyfriend. So,
and that would be if he were like a well-adjusted like member of society and not a deeply traumatized orphan that's lived most of his life on his own.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not fun being a devil hunter.
No. Since you included some screenshots, I did want to say that I thought the ending to this was awesome. It was very city pop, which I think was intentional. Like all the visuals was very city pop. But you know, the constant rainbow puke animation was weird and funny. So yeah.
I think last week, I can't remember if we were on the stream or if it was off stream, but I think I said like, I can't imagine, you know, it's gonna be really hard for any of these new ending themes to top the one from episode 5, which was my favorite up to this point. But damn it, you put a CRT filter on some good animation and stick some sick bubblegum pop with it. This might be my favorite one. It's at least like top two.
I think this is my number two. I think episode 5 is still my number one, just because I still like the song a little more, even though I really liked the visuals for this one. But
yeah.
All right. So that's kind of where we leave off with Chainsaw Man. I don't have screenshots for Gundam, but I just want to say that I'm happy that Gundam's back. And also they officially finally admitted that Ariel is a Gundam, which was
that,
funny.
The secret that literally everyone knew except for Suletta.
Yeah.
And then her mom at the end is like, hey, I have to say a few things in this episode. I thought it was really funny that Suletta is in no way, shape, or form like weirded out by her mom wearing her evil Charvelin mask. She's yeah, like, hey, yeah. Mom.
Hey, what's up, Mom?
Hey, sweetie. Like, okay.
Sweetie, go get your mama a drink. I need to vaguely threaten your girlfriend.
Right.
Yeah.
And also, I've seen a lot of people talking, understandably, about whether or not Gundam is actually going to follow through on any of its gay vibes. Mm-hmm. Is obviously still out. I think this is maybe the most development, I guess you could call it, with the Mirene Suletta dynamic that we've gotten in a while.
They're forming a company together. They're joining together in capitalistic matrimony.
Well, and they were really pushing the bride thing again.
Like, yeah.
Like when Mirene was like, I'm going to protect you. Like, I'm going to.
Yeah, I liked that part.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah. I also liked that Prospera, I mean, she was kind of mean about it, TBH, but she had a point because Mirene has, you know, talked a lot of talk about, I need to get away from my evil father and go to Earth and grow tomatoes and all these other sorts of things without acknowledging the social and financial benefit she gets just from being associated with him as his daughter. And that's never come up. You know, she just walks around high society and is able to just immediately have respect from her peers and all these sorts of things because of her association with her father. And so when Prosper and her are talking one-on-one, she says all this stuff and Prosper kind of laughs at her. And again, kind of mean, but she's like, you got to put your pride away. Like you don't understand the word that means when you get things for just existing privileges.
Privileges. Yeah.
The privileges that you have just for being who you are. And you should probably acknowledge those before you just stand around and talk about how awful your dad is all the time because you're benefiting from association with him.
And maybe even use them instead of just trying to pretend that they don't exist, maybe acknowledge them, use them. You know, daddy's going to give you some of that money. Maybe you can, you know, shove it back in his face.
So, and that's what she ends up doing is that there's been this ongoing law or that you can't use Gundams because at least the technology at the time, hey, it, you know, was killing its users, which, you know, okay, fair, but that doesn't mean technology can't advance beyond that. And it seems to have with the Ariel and even with Elon's mech, which its name escapes me right now. It's like, it's a weird name. I'd recognize it if I saw it. So she decides to form a company at this fancy Kickstarter party, and her dad invests 3%. And so him giving
it's
her
like it's like the 1%ers equivalent of like a Tupperware party. It's so funny.
Yeah.
So we're all gonna get together and try to hawk our shit.
Who's got the best idea for new add-ons to the giant mech industry? Oh, me. So they do that under the premise that actually we are going to do Gundam, but it's going to be safe Gundam with oversight. And daddy gave me 3%. What do you guys think? Instead of stalling out on this tech. And that's the way they save the Ariel. So yeah, that was interesting. I'm curious to also see how Suletta's relationship with haughty Elon continues and how long it'll take her to figure out that that's not Elon. The other one was a clone.
Right.
This one is just
crappy. And I don't know. I might have misremembered it, but did Prospera say that the big battle Gundam thingy from the prologue that like resulted in Gundams being banned? Did she say that was 21 years ago?
See, I was also like squinting at that point because I'm not positive, and I know that there's a big thing trying to figure out the timeline of this show that. The assumption that Suletta and Eri are the same person isn't really true. And she could be an older sister that like wasn't at the base at the time. Although that introduces a whole bunch of other things, like who was she with? Because both parents were there and what would have been her little sister, or people have floated that she's a clone.
We know that cloning is a thing.
We
or
do.
Whatever they did. I was a little
unclear. She's an advanced human or something, but supposedly she's not the same kind of thing that the Elon we knew was.
She's not a cyber new type. She's a homegrown or whatever. Something. She's a witch, right? Or whatever.
Called. Yeah. They keep calling her a witch. So we'll have to see still where that's going, but that it's murky. The timeline is, I think, intentionally murky.
But I think the show's paced great so far. Yeah. I mean, I think it got announced for 24 episodes, so not the usual, usual 50 that a Gundam gets, which might be a good thing.
Yeah.
Depending
on. They also keep like having the what I feel like are the Utena references. Like even this party, there's a party equivalent in early Utena. Where Nanami's dress melts when, not Nanami, sorry, Anthy's dress melts off of her. It was a gift.
Oh,
and
then
when Nanami spills a whole bunch of drinks on her. And we see in this episode that it's Myorin lends a dress to Celetta, and Celetta manages to cover herself in champagne on accident. Her dress doesn't melt, obviously, but that seemed like a slight reference. And then there's also a moment where Myorin doesn't say this, but she apparently remembers the death of her mother. And at least from her memory as a child when that happened, her father was kind of absent and maybe she didn't feel like he grieved her mother much or something. We only get kind of a small, like a short view of the coffin and it's full of flowers. And that's also a reoccurring motif in Utena with Utena herself, like sleeping in a coffin full of flowers and being found by, who she's found by kind of changes as the story goes on. There's a couple different fake outs with who comes across her while she's in this coffin. So
they know what they're doing. They're, and I'm all for it.
Yeah. I like it. I like it a lot. Okay. We're almost out of time, but I do want to talk about Akiba Maid War because it continues to be hilarious as often as possible. This particular Maid War comes to a close. But not before Nagomi abandons her maidly duties to become a ninja, and then to become a ninja maid. And then
we should clarify for people that aren't watching Akiba Maid War, that does not mean that she has left the food service industry.
Right.
She is still working at a ninja-themed restaurant in Akihabara.
Right.
But there is a cultural distinction where the ninjas are literally just wait staff that presumably do not engage in murderous gang warfare.
Apparently not. I'm trying to find, I realized I opened the Akiba Maid War episode 6 screen caps instead of episode 7. There they are. So this will take me just a second. Sorry, everybody. So they have, I mean, and she's still kind of doing maid-like duties,
I guess. She's still like a She's a waitress, you know.
Right, she's got a catch, you know, a bunch of maid catchphrases, and
Nagonin, is that her ninja name?
Yeah, Nagonin. Yeah. Oops. Yeah. Wow, I didn't even know.
The pun game on this episode is very strong.
It is, but it's Ronko that finds her first, and she's just kind of in denial. She still has her pigtails. They stick through the top. But, you know, in memory of her fallen sister, Nagonin, she returns to fight what appears to be a losing battle against maid aliens who are ready to take down their cafe. The Japanese name for the cafe is really fun to say. I wish I could remember it right now, but it's like don don didon.
Yeah.
Don didon don ton or something like that. It always just sounds like they're making music sounds. So in this during the showdown, the chief takes a hostage and the maid aliens just promptly kill the hostage.
Yeah.
They're like disposable, don't care. I think, is this the first time we've seen the Gyaru use a gun?
I think so. And the episode does make a point to show that she and the chief are like the last two to get involved with like the real brawl throwdown fighting. So I think that's sort of like her, in keeping with her characters, that she will fight, but I don't think that's her specialty.
So this is a shot of Nagomi flying through the air in her ninja outfit, saying, "I'm a maid," and then proceeds to use shuriken. Punk will fucking kill you. She uses shuriken and smoke bombs and all the other stuff at her disposal, and she's actually pretty good at it. So maybe she was just a stealth fighter from the start, you know? Like she was.
Well, no, my headcanon is that all of these battle-ready ninjutsu techniques were just a part of her cafe orientation.
Well, yeah, because like, we see her using shuriken on a bullseye. Yeah. Like,
so I have to imagine that like a part of the onboarding process for working at the ninja cafe was learning how to lethally murder people or non-lethally incapacitate them with kunai and shuriken if necessary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just in case it ever came up. You know, you can't be besmirching the image of the cafe.
Now, Akiba Maid War has one big mystery, and I'm curious if it'll ever like reveal its hand on this. Do you think we will ever see the panda without the panda head on it? God. Like, do you think we'll ever see the person inside this panda outfit? Because they like straight up beat some people to death in this episode. Is it better? Would it be better if we never saw them, or would the reveal be funnier? I'm not sure.
So for some reason, and this probably isn't even possible because they probably like shared screen time, a part of me was wondering, is the reveal going to be that it's that ramen guy? It's like that he like moonlights as the panda.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah.
Or is it going to be like a ridiculously hot and talented maid that like could have been using her skills this whole time, but has chosen to be the
mascot panda instead.
The off-brand useless mascot. I don't know.
Why do they even have a panda mascot? That's never been resolved either. It's a pig-themed cafe with a panda mascot.
Well, but he has a pig bow tie, so. Or she. They have a pig bow tie.
James, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I'm sure that's what the chief thought, though.
Yeah.
It was like, maybe like the panda outfit they found in the trash. And like, if we stick a pig bow tie on it, it's still on theme.
Or I wonder if like the chief used to run like a panda-themed cafe and like they all got horribly killed. And so the chief and the panda just like tried to start over, but they didn't want to invest in a new costume.
Possibly. So they effectively like whip the maid aliens' asses despite being horribly outnumbered. And Crimson Supernova retreats and is confronted in a park for a final showdown in which Nagomi refuses to kill her because ramen changes over time and so should maids. Which
maybe the maid industry shouldn't be about lethal bloody gang warfare and should just be about
maids
serving omelets with cute little ketchup doodles on them. I don't know.
This was literally my favorite part because she's just so serious the whole time and she's like, if you call yourself a maid, feel the moe moe kune, and then she just like gives her the heart hand, and that's, you know, that's it.
And again, I just love like her response is like, why I have to hear that shit from a fucking ninja, which again implies that there's like this cultural beef between the maids and the ninjas, where the ninjas are like second class citizens because they don't engage in this gang war.
Yeah.
They just try to do their jobs to serve people ninja themed food and beverages.
Yeah. And I mean, we skipped a bit, but like there's ongoing bickering. This isn't like the first time. Like there's another time where she calls her a ninja. She's like, no, I'm a maid. And she's like, you're a ninja. And like, they're like arguing about what she is. Moe moe kune. But yeah, that moment of weakness is enough for the remaining maid aliens to take Crimson Supernova out. It's time for you to become a Stardust memory.
That was my favorite line.
Yeah, it was a really good line. They just fill her full of bullets.
They do.
Like, and it's implied that they then put her in an oil drum and drop her in the sea.
As you do.
And her loyalists splinter off from the group, leaving no fighters for the maid aliens. So even though they plan to join up with the Creature Land group, they no longer have any chips on the table to force negotiations. So they have to concede everything. And that's the sad end to the maid aliens. And also it's kind of implied that they still want the pig maids
Well, because that now correct, that's the Creature Land boss, right?
Yes, the Creature Land boss doesn't like them either. Like, she's kind of tried to set them up to die several times at this point, and they've made it out by the skin of their teeth. So
I'm guessing we're gonna get a fun baseball episode where no one will die, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And then
not during baseball.
Never. No. And then I'm guessing that the final arc is going to be in true Yakuza fashion. They're going to have to go up against their own organization from within. And
I can't overemphasize how much of this episode is just engaged in like Yakuza storytelling stereotypes with maids, though. Like, the soundtrack sounds like something out of a Western. So it's all like showdown type music. Everyone's like yelling about loyalty and politicking between the two groups. It's just everyone is dressed as a maid, and all the characters are taking it 100% seriously the entire time, but the staff want you to know that they are not, and that you should be laughing at this, which just makes it funnier.
Yeah, and it's even down to like, because I saw I saw some people like commenting on how like with Nerula, we didn't really get to know her well. It kind of felt like she came out of nowhere. But it's like, if you've played as many of the Yakuza games as I have now played, the number of times some random character will be like, "Hey, it's me, your friend for years," only to die tragically and horribly because it's the only reason they exist in the story. It's like, yep, man, that fits.
Yeah.
So anytime you meet a new character in a Yakuza game, you just have to flip a coin. It's like, all right, are they going to die horribly, or are they going to be revealed to be a traitor from the rival Yakuza family that's tried to secretly infiltrate the main Yakuza family? Or are they secretly the mastermind behind everything and you're only going to find out in the last 2 hours of a 65-hour game?
Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, we've been talking about this show for a while now. I hope you guys have checked it out. It's on High Dive. It wasn't one of the, like, big anticipated shows in a really stacked season, but it's consistently really well animated and really funny. Yep. So please check out Aqua Maid War. That's it for us this week. Next week, I think we'll be back. Let's see, it's going to be Thanksgiving and then 29th. And then, oh my God, we're into December.
Don't tell me that. That can't be real.
And then we have to start thinking about like best anime of the year stuff. And
No.
And a new season in January. Yes, it's a never-ending cycle. So
if we get a season that's even 30% as good as this season has been, I'll be okay.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we'll be talking about the great season of fall 2022 for a while. Remember when we got all those really good shows in fall 2022? Yeah. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week. Stay safe, and I hope you get to eat some yummy food on Thursday.
And feel the moe moe kyun, everybody.
Moe moe kyun!
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, they're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.